Blog Talk Radio.
Make a move extreme. Shortcut to your dream. A go straight to the stars on that flying thing.
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, my caffeine kicked in, so I'm feeling all right. So let's keep going.
Hard to hear you over the music.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a reason why I'm blasting Wigwam again, and I'll talk about it in a minute.
Right?
But first, let me talk about Miss My Enchantress of Nevermore. Please welcome to the show. Now in L.A., what part of L.A. are you hanging out in, Miss Enchantress?
I am in Whittier. I am right by the high school where the Enchantment Under the Sea dance was shot for Back to the Future.
Ah, most excellent. So please welcome to the show, newly residing in Los Angeles, Raven Jasper Hawk. How you doing? Welcome back to Sexy Witches.
I am doing moderately well. Like, C+. This is actually a huge improvement.
I was going to say, you were idling last time we talked, so it sounds like you're actually in the first gear today, and I'm so glad, because, you know, we need you happy and healthy and a little on the buzz side, and I think all those things are coming, at least most of those things are there, and 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? Yeah, it's
we're getting there.
Before we get into our witch and bitch, I do want to talk about, and Raven, you may want to go la, 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 since I know you haven't seen Peacemaker. I just wanted to talk briefly about Peacemaker and the fucking finale, which just dropped, which, oh, my God. And also, Wigwams, Do You Want to Taste It After 18 Years is number one. Not only is it number one in the United States, it's the song that knocked We Don't Talk About Bruno off the chart. So, I mean, I know, right? And Aaron, you know what the invisible bone is. Last time you were asking me, and I was like, sex? I don't know, because it's 80s music. But
that totally makes sense that you would think. I follow James Gunn on the Twitter, tweet, 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 and he said, you know that asshole move people do when they pretend to throw a bone or something for a dog? That's the invisible bone.
Oh, so it's like it's a misdirect.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
It's all a right. fake out of your dog.
Now we're not alone here. We got one other person on the line, new to the show, but not new to us or in our hearts. Please welcome to the show the Dirty Southern Sorcerer, Nathan Hamilton, the voice of violence. How are you doing, sir, in Atlanta, Georgia?
Woo-hoo.
Hello? There. Are you muted, sir?
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, my God, he's no longer there.
I know.
No.
He died. Where is he?
No.
Okay,
am I here now?
Oh, yes.
Oh, there he is.
Resurrection.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
We almost just canceled everything.
Like a voice from the other side. Here comes the Dirty Southern Sorcerer.
Not only are you the Dirty Southern Sorcerer, last weekend you were Reverend Nathan Hamilton, were you not?
Absolutely. The preacher from the Black Lagoon, the sinister minister, the pastor of disaster. The Reverend
Amazing.
Nathan Hamilton, as I did perform a wedding for my good buddy and podcast colleague on one of my other shows, Sell Your Soul, Brad Slayton.
Awesome.
I actually
How'd
was
it go?
There in attendance. Oh, it was very good. He made everyone cry because he whipped Aww. Out Velveteen Rabbit, and everyone goes,
oh, man.
That's my secret weapon. I start out with, you know, that whole passage and the, you know, what does it mean to be real, and you're real when someone loves you, not just to play with. I bust that out at the beginning of the wedding ceremony,
yeah.
and there you have a dry eye in the house 3 minutes in.
Right. That's smart.
Myself
That's like one of the best books ever.
The Evil Genius was in attendance. It was their first wedding, so they
Aww.
Were really, really excited. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. So thank you for inviting us, and thank you, Brad Slayton and his new wife Lorraine, for letting us attend their wedding. And the food at the rehearsal dinner was off the chain. Oh my God, it was Louisiana. Louisiana food. Oh my God! Like I had a jambalaya,
oh, yeah.
and it was like Mardi Gras
oh,
early.
Man.
So that was
dude.
Good.
That cornbread. Oh my God.
The cornbread was insane.
Cornbread that was amazing.
It was insane. Like you bit into it, it was just like, that should be illegal. It was that simple. I mean, seriously, it was just But Peacemaker, let's get back to Peacemaker. So the finale dropped, and I know 3 out of 4 of the sexy witches have watched it. I've watched it twice, actually. Without getting into spoilers, because there is one spoiler I don't want to spoil for Raven, because Raven, we got to find a way to get you to HBO Max, because you need to binge that shit. It's really easy
I
binge.
Know,
They're
I
all short episodes. But
I've got to look that up and send that to you. I'm so sorry. I dropped the ball on that.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, come on. I just want to say, I don't think I'm going to see a better cameo for the rest
right?
of the year. Like, seriously. Like, mind-blowing, right? And funny as fuck. And the F,
yep.
fuck in particular. I mean, it's just like, I was so pleased with the ending of that show, and I can't wait for season 2. I mean, that if that is the level of TV we're going to see in 2022, I think we're really lucky. I hope that the season hasn't blown its – I mean, the year has blown its wad already, because that was just so friggin' good. And I actually found it more satisfying than the Boba Fett, but Boba Fett was also very good, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about it, Mr. Aaron Kogan, since you had Suicide Squad at number 1 like I did on our top 10?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it was kind of a continuation of The Suicide Squad, to differentiate from Suicide Squad. I thought it really played to the strength of Cena and Gunn as well. Is there a better guy using soundtracks in the business now? Maybe Edgar Wright. It's like him and Edgar Wright, really.
Nathan just said that exact
Glad
same
you
thing
mentioned
to me
that.
Yesterday.
So. Mm. Yes, indeed. But I thought just everything worked. I had no idea that he had been dating his lead. his female lead, but apparently they're now engaged after a 10-year whatever relationship, so that's cool. I guess we'll see her in season two. But I really enjoyed it. I don't think I enjoyed it quite as much as you did. I thought even for as deep as they went with emotions with the character of Peacemaker and all his horrible, horrible backstory and da-da-da, I still thought the silliness of the humor, which I totally enjoy, kind of made it hard to put together as one piece. I think some of the other works, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, for example, WandaVision, were stronger in that regard. But hell yeah, I'm down for season two. Can't come soon enough.
Oh, I do think James Gunn relied a little bit too much on cross-talking to get his humor out. And there was a lot of it, like almost every other scene in Peacemaker. And that can get a little tedious. So I totally validate that. At the same time, boy, was that fucking funny. Oh, my God. There's just, you know, I think it's not the Peacemaker we want, but it's definitely the Peacemaker we deserve. You know what I'm saying? So,
and, you know, unlike a lot of comic book movies, James Gunn can stick the fucking landing.
Yes, he can. And also make us care about characters that, like, we really wouldn't give a fuck about normally. And I think that's awesome. You know, deep diving.
Well,
you know, so. Nathan, so let's see. Give a quick wrap-up feelings about Peacemaker, and then go ahead and talk about Night of Soho, because I know you just talked about it, and talk about the soundtracks, because clearly Aaron's in your wheelhouse with that.
Yeah, I've got two main thoughts about Peacemaker. Number one, I don't think he could carry a whole series, but I want a Vigilante spinoff movie. Do what?
Go ahead.
Oh, I say right on. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And number two, avoiding spoilers, at the end of the season, something happens that changes the status quo of that corner of the DC cinematic world in a significant way, and I'm really interested to see where they go with that and how that plays into future Suicide Squad and Peacemaker and the, you know, the things in that whole area.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it also completely, without getting into it, Amanda Waller is going to be even more front and center for the duration of whatever the James Gunn universe is going to be. So,
Has there ever in the history of movies been a better casting than Viola Davis's Amanda Waller?
She could be a little larger, but yes. Character, I can't fault her at all.
I mean, just
in the comic book, she's a big lady.
Yes, she is. And in the Justice League cartoon, she was as well.
Yes, indeed.
But no matter what iteration of Amanda Waller, she's no joke. You know, that's one of the reasons why I like about Amanda Waller. She's serious, and she has no superpowers. Yet she could hold her own against even Superman. You know, she's a badass. So I've always liked that character. So terrifying.
Do we all agree that? Oh yeah, absolutely. Do we all agree that Freddie Stroma, the guy who played Vigilante, is the breakout actor from the series? The guy who's going to be in everything now.
Oh yeah,
and it's amazing because he wasn't cast as Vigilante. They actually cast him last minute and reshot half the show. So it's incredible, right? So, you know, congratulations to that guy. He's kind of a gorgeous, too. I mean, he's kind of a hottie.
Natalie said, he's huge.
That's who that was. So my favorite scene was him in the prison when he got the Nazis to fight. That was funny. It was so funny.
So good.
So good, so good. I want to talk about other movies, but I also want to go in before, because we got some 2 minutes to kill here. I got to talk about the Oscars, dudes, and Sexy Witches. They announced today that they are not showing half the awards live. And that includes all the technical awards, original score. Okay. And of course they totally are not going to allow the documentaries and the shorts to have airtime.
That's bullshit.
I mean, they're going to have airtime, but whatever edited seamlessly into the broadcast means, I have no idea.
Yeah.
They keep saying it's because no one cares about those awards. And I'm like, that's not true.
Those are the awards I care about the most.
Yes. Every person I have ever known cares about those awards. And those awards matter more to the people who win them than Michelle Pfeiffer winning Best Actress. She's not going to lose work. They will.
Right.
You know? So, they don't know their audience, and it's not going to work, and their ratings
are
even more. So
yeah, I agree.
Patton Oswalt said it best, I think, when he said, "These people, these men and women directing these short films, they're your future best directors. These are the guys you're going to go back to the footage on 10 years down the line, whatever." And everyone knows that as far as the Academy goes, all these awards, the technical so-called awards, are the only place genre film ever picks up awards. Science fiction, fantasy, horror traditionally get the bum's rush from the Academy, except for sound editing, makeup and hair, costumes, da-da-da.
I'm not going to get to see makeup and hair at nominations, which is an award that I very much love and follow religiously. Costumes. I mean, come on. Editing. Once again, they shit on editing. You can't have a movie without editing. You just can't.
Right.
Directors can't edit their own films. We know that. It's very rare that you have a great director and a great editor and chopping. You know, maybe Rodriguez might be the exception, but he still doesn't get nominated for editing.
Right.
It's just so fucking frustrating. Like, why am I don't give a fuck about who's going to win Best Actor or Director. I do care about because, you know, director is very important. But, and like I said, I think Dan Campion's got it this year, which would be kind of cool, even though I'm not a huge fan of Power of the Dog. But, I'm pretty upset about this. So I think it's a mistake, and they're blowing it, and they don't know their audience. Now, the Tonys did something similar. And what they did is they did broadcast the first hour, but they did it on PBS. And then they did the second part of it on the mainstream televisions. That would be cool. I'd be fine with that. Or live stream, or having it on the live stream on my computer. I would be okay with that even. You know,
yeah, I'm fine with that.
But I don't want to see edited versions of speeches. You know, that's their moment.
Here's the thing. The Oscars are trying to attract more. You know, the only people who care about those categories are these super hardcore cinema fans. But what the Oscars fail to realize is because the ratings have shrunk, the super hardcore cinema fans are the only ones still watching the Oscars. So you're going to alienate them and no one's going to watch it.
It's just like, when they've done this before in the past, like when they've had technical awards and they'll show, like, right, they're going into commercial, they start the commercial music and they'll say something like, yesterday technical awards were given to A, B, and C. And it's such a throwaway. They've always used it as a lead into a commercial. It's edited so poorly. It's just, I'm just hoping it's not like that because it's worse than not having the fucking award on in the first place.
We'll see what happens on that. But to talk about films that aren't necessarily nominated for Oscars, I'll throw it back to Nathan real quick. Quick run. We talked about Last Night in Soho on the countdown, but you finally got to see it. And so how did you feel about it? And you mentioned the soundtrack.
Suicide Squad probably had the best soundtrack. I kind of agreed with you. Had I gotten to see this movie last year, I would have solidly put that as my best soundtrack. My God, the soundtrack is good. It's a bunch of fairly obscure British Invasion bangers, man. Like, good
nice.
One after good one after good one. Great. And that movie is
Go ahead. Sorry.
And that movie is absolutely gorgeous. Like the cinematography, the art direction, everything. That movie is beautiful.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Raven.
I was going to say we should do a soundtrack round robin episode soon. I don't think we've done one of those. That would be really cool.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah,
I'm down.
I already know what my number one is, but I'll hold it for that. So
that's a hell of an idea.
But I would say if we do that, we're gonna not count movie musicals in that. It would be purely soundtrack.
And not fair. That makes
and
sense.
Not scores, soundtracks, so collections of songs. So
Okay, cool.
So all right, we'll talk about that on a future broadcast.
Nice.
We have a whole year ahead of us. I saw Antlers finally, which is the other film I really want, and
it is a solid fucking little monster movie.
Terry Russell is the smartest final girl I've ever seen in a movie. Maybe it's because she's older. She makes smart decisions, like not going in the house when you hear the scary noise. Oh my God, she doesn't go in the house.
Whoa,
woohoo! Like that's just one of many. Total badass little solid flick. You know, it's not like, you know, going to win an Oscar, but it's definitely one of the, I love a good monster movie, and it's Wendigos, and Wendigos are very, you don't get those very often unless it's the last Fessenden movie, like Fessenden movie. So that was cool. I know that a lot of people were bitching and witching on, Texas Chainsaw Massacre's new movie on Netflix. I don't know if we saw it, but I know Nathan watched it. I actually convinced him to watch it.
Hot take.
I haven't watched it yet. It's on my list.
I had a lot of – I loved it. I really dug it. I get what everyone's whining about, but they're whining about slasher movie tropes. I don't understand that in the least.
What are you going to do?
Like, it is a modern movie, and it's not made like a slasher movie from the 80s, but it's about the best slasher you're going to get now. It has great kills in it. The story isn't intricate, but it doesn't need to be. I mean, how many horror movies can we think of where annoying assholes go somewhere, walk in like they own the place, and the locals fuck them up is the sum total of the story?
Like all of them.
I mean, that's so many horror movies out there, and I don't understand why people are bitching that that's the story. That's how it goes, man.
That's the rules.
These characters are so annoying. I wanted them all to die. Yes.
That's
my idea. Congratulations.
And they will.
Welcome to the genre.
I will say, the first person that – here. Okay, spoiler alert, Leatherface kills some people in this movie.
Oh, no.
What?
Yeah, but the first person that Leatherface killed is probably my favorite kill in a horror movie in maybe the last 5 years, maybe 10.
Oh, shit.
It's amazing.
Nice.
That's actually pretty big words from you.
I saw that, and I'm like, how the hell has no one thought about that before? That's brilliant.
It can't be as good as the Umbrella Kill in Stitches, though. That's still my favorite slasher.
That one is good, great.
But this one, I want to say it because it's so good, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody. Just forget that everybody's bitching about it for some weird reason and just go into it just looking to have fun, and you're going to find a fun movie. Yes, it's dumb as shit in parts, but it's a slasher flick. Come on.
But you had completely opposite things to say about Resident Evil 4 or whatever that is now.
Oh, God. If you want to bitch about a horror movie, how about people jump on that one's case? That was horrible. It's not part of the series that has come before.
Oh.
With the Mila Jovovich wakes up naked and confused series. But it's a new...
Which is also a lot of movies.
Yeah. But it's trying to start a new Resident Evil series, and I hope it doesn't, because this one was bad. Real bad.
What's it called? Is it Welcome to Raccoon City?
Welcome to Raccoon City. Yeah.
Yep.
They take like some of the... And there's a few fun Easter eggs for, you know, fans of the games, but like they pretty much take Resident Evil 1 and 2 and take the highlights of it and just string them together. and change some of the characters around in ways that don't make sense.
Kind of lazy.
And yeah, it really is. I mean, there's a couple cool set pieces, but overall, God, that was terrible.
That's okay, sir.
Oh,
I recommend not watching that.
Before we go, Raven, is there any movies or a TV that's been a standout for you in the last couple weeks?
Dude, I got to talk about Bel Air.
Oh, Bel Air.
You guys
that's
know
right.
about this?
Yeah, please, go for it. We got 5 minutes,
okay.
So I'll give you 2.5, and I'll give 2.5 to Aaron. So.
Sounds good. Okay, so some dude on the interwebs went on the YouTubes and made supercut of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air so that it looked like a drama. And Will Smith saw this and was like, this is a good idea, and met with the guy. And now there's a drama show on Peacock called Bel-Air, and the main character is named Will Smith. And
what?
He lives in Philadelphia and gets into trouble during a basketball game and has to move to Bel Air. If I could just truncate some moments here, Carlton snorts Xanax. Episode 1. All right,
okay.
This is what we're this is what we're looking at. The N-word was dropped about 80 times in the first 15 minutes. Like, they're a little fast and loose with that. And it's like watching a train wreck. I don't know how it has it has like pretty good scores so far. Like I'm on Tracked right now. It has a 78%, and I have no idea. But the thing is, I can't stop watching it. There's enough references. Like they ham up the references so much. So there's actually the line, I got in one little fight and my ma got scared. And he says it very dramatically, and it makes it hilarious. Like, it's not supposed to be. But, yeah, I highly recommend it because it's fucking insane. It's like the darkest timeline.
It's like
insane.
When someone hands you a sour milk, oh, you got to try this.
Yeah, like smell this milk. It smells disgusting, and you do it. Like, that's this.
Yeah,
it's on Peacock.
Addicted. That's weird.
Yeah,
okay,
I don't
I
know. Like, I'm questioning everything and my own reality. But I highly recommend you check it out and just tell me I'm not insane or I am insane. I don't care which one. I just kind of want to know. Yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. I will
right
pass
on
to Aaron. My
all
time.
Right, Aaron, real quick, because pretty soon our guest is going to call. Is there anything we
right
need to mention that stands out to
yes
you?
Yes. Yeah, although I'm going way, 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 way off field here into the world of opera. I got to see an opera in production. It was just a staged reading / singing of it, but I can't wait to see this thing fully produced. It's an original work produced for Fort Worth Opera and San Diego Opera called, pardon my horrible Spanish, El Último Sueño de Frida y Diego, The Last Dream of Frida and Diego.
Frida Kahlo's
dead. Oh, my God. Love the freaking music. I prefer to watch the whole thing and look at the libretto very, very, very occasionally. So I have yet to sit down and read the whole libretto through, but I just loved everything about it. The descriptions that I have read in the libretto just open up the possibility of a complete psychotronic kind of production with all kinds of fun things put up on scrims, and it's, you know, all in the underworld and traveling to the real world. And I made a joke after the production, you know, Coco was a lot funnier. But in all seriousness, this is an opera that I would totally go to see a full production of any day of the week.
Oh,
and that
man
was says, yeah,
if
I agree. So good.
If it goes up, let's go, Aaron. We can review
hell
it
yeah
together.
I'm
awesome
down.
It sounds fantastic. I remember seeing something about that, and now I'm actually really glad you mentioned it. So almost forgot. I'll see.
Yeah.
Well, our guest has not called in yet. Let me see if he's around. Is there anything I've left off that I wanted to talk about? Other than Joe Bob is killing it again. I love that he paired Black Roses with, what was the other movie? Oh my God, I'm blanking it.
Frankenhooker.
Oh, I love Frankenhooker. I was here for Halloween once.
That was just like, I didn't know those movies would pair that well together, but they were the perfect movies to pair
that. That's perfect.
So funny.
They're both so good. So, they're both so 80s.
Yeah, and he had Frank Henenlotter. Oh, he's on. We had Frank Henenlotter on the show. So, and he was looking good. Like, he was looking kind of ill
last
time I saw him, and he looked way healthy. He can't remember anything, but, you know, I'm sure there's reasons for that. Speaking of low-budget independent horror, let me bring on my guest. He's like, I stand by, I'm going on, bringing you on. stand by, sir, I'm bringing you on. So, independent horror has to have a root somewhere. And my boy here, he's been on the show before, and he was on the last panel I did at a horror convention, which happened to be Days of the Dead Atlanta. And it was, you know, make your first horror film. And he was in the process of making his first horror film. And now he has made his first horror film. And it won the Locals Award for Ohio. So Best Directors from Ohio. And now he's actually premiering it in theaters across the nation.
Yay.
Or at least in the Midwest. Or look for it for you near you. It's called Tarot Trip. Please welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, actually. Mr. Jeff Damon, welcome, sir. You're back on with the Sexy Witches. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me again.
Oh, I'm so glad. We talked after Nightmare Film Festival because you had your show, and we both won awards at the festival and watched both of our movies together. That was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, by the way.
And you're welcome, and thank you. Not many people showed up for mine. A lot of people showed up for yours. And that was great. And I heard rumor that your turnout was very good two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago tomorrow, we had our local premiere because the movie was filmed in Cincinnati and Southern Indiana. So long time now, people have been asking, when can I see it? When can I see it? So we got a local theater to host us, and just under 200 people.
Well, that's still awesome. That's amazingly awesome.
And they paid, so.
Oh, wow.
Even better.
Ooh. You have to say money talks. The audience that we saw it with, everything that you wanted to hit did. How did this audience receive your movie?
Exactly the same. Gasps at the right moments. A couple of laughs where, hey, that wasn't supposed to be funny, but if they're reacting to the movie, as long as they're not throwing shit at the screen, I don't care.
Well, you know, as they say in professional wrestling, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad, heat is heat. So, you know, that's awesome. And you also announced, since I talked to you last, even though I knew it was in the works, but now it's official, you have a distribution deal.
We do. Mutiny Pictures is distributing the movie. They're going to start with a small theater run, college towns, art house cinemas, one night events, just dot them around the country. And real quick after that, we're going to go to streaming, but I cannot divulge the streaming services. I'm not allowed to yet.
Okay. Well, you definitely have to keep us up on that because I have a feeling that how most people are going to find your film is through a streaming service. And I'm very pleased to know that a couple of my friends are getting their films on streaming platforms. My boy Jeremy Kipp just got his film Slap Face on Shudder, so congratulations to him.
Nice.
I want to talk about having him on, but that's another story because right now we're going to talk about Jeff. Because Jeff, you've been actually in a little bit of a hot streak yourself. I know you can't talk about everything, but please talk about your adventure since we saw you last. or talk to you.
Well, first of all, I just watched Slapface yesterday. Tell your friend it was great.
Oh, I will.
Right
I
on.
Will. Thank you.
Yeah, as soon as you said that, I thought, didn't I just watch that? It might have been today. It's been a long day, you know. thank you very much. What have I been up to? I can talk about some of this now. It's been announced. Horror fans out there will remember 1984 movie called The Mutilator, also known as Fall Break, because they didn't want to change the title, I believe. Bud Cooper didn't want to change the title card, but the distribution company, I believe, wanted to change it to The Mutilator. Anyway, we're making the sequel. Congrats. Same writer. Well, Bud Cooper is writing it again. He's directing. It's going to have the same feel as the original. I can tell you this much. It is the story of people who are rebooting the original Mutilator, and a slasher starts taking them out. That's all I can tell you.
Nice.
You know, it's like they're trying to make a movie, and they become the movie instead.
Go ahead.
Please go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say meta is your wheelhouse. So this sounds great for you.
It definitely is. And I didn't even know it until someone pointed it out a couple of years ago. Yeah, I love meta. So we have Damien Maffei is going to join us on this one. He is from Haunt and Wrong Turn. And Chaney Morrow is coming over as well. From Haunt, from Wrong Turn, Chaney was also the lead in my film, Terror Trips. And then our star is actually Terry Kaiser, who was Bernie in Weekend at Bernie's, and he also played the Doctor in Friday the 13th, Part 7. We got Bernie for this movie. I'm thrilled.
Nice.
Yeah. And a couple of other people. We've got Cody Cameron, a former Playmate model. We have Eva Hamilton. I love Eva Hamilton. She, look her up on IMDb. She's got a bevy of horror films. But one movie that she did, and I loved her in it, and nobody ever talks about it, is a movie called Ruin Me.
Oh, Ruin Me's killer.
Isn't that great? Eva was in that. I get to work with her. But I'm thrilled. I can't tell you where we're shooting it. I can't tell you when. It's in North Carolina, but I can't tell you exactly where. Wants to be
North Carolina. You have to say it like that.
Bud wants to keep it quiet as to the dates so that we don't have a little bit of a fan appreciation day on set.
Mm.
The local police department don't need to be chasing away fans, so Bud's trying to keep it quiet as to when we're shooting.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. And, so I would say that, like, you couldn't have a better business card than Terror Trips at this point, because it looks great. It has evil Russians who doesn't love that, how did you come up with the idea of Terror Trips? In the first place, I mean, yes, you do actually hear about tour. There are tour companies that kind of do what the center premise of the story is, but you take it to a different angle. And I know it has a lot to do with my current residence, Maryland.
Yes, it does. In fact, there are companies that do this. The most famous one is Onset Cinema. And the guy who runs Onset Cinema, Kenny Caperton, he will show a movie at the location where the movie was filmed. He'll do this nice guided tour of the place and show you around this movie that you loved, and then they screen the movie. And that was the entire basis of my film. However, before Kenny's company, Onset Cinema, was founded, I was at the Blair Witch location. We were doing a full 2.5-day tour of every spot. And yes, we camped out in the woods the one night.
Nice.
Thank you. It's called the Blair Witch Experience, and Matt Blazza runs it every year. He didn't run it last year because obvious reasons, but he has plans this October to host it again. BlairWitchExperience.com. You can look it up.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I'm down there with Blasey and doing this tour. And when I'm falling asleep in my tent the night, I thought, what if this was real? What if the Blair Witch actually did exist? And, okay, now I'm about to be hunted. And as I drove home a couple of days later, I started writing the script in my head. And by the time I got home, I had the entire outline in my head and just hit the keyboard and wrote out a script about a group of people who do this exact thing and then eventually end up dead because it's a horror film.
You know, it just does, you know, occupational hazard, right? So
exactly.
So, I go to that area every once in a while because Harper's Ferry is right next door to Birkenfell. So I know that area.
Yeah, I've seen the signs. Yeah, I know Harper's Ferry.
Harper's Ferry is awesome. There's a train bridge that goes through part of the C&O Canal, and it's really cool there. I usually go walk through that. Anyway, here you go. Call right at 10.
That first tour that I went on, what drew me into the whole thing, not just the fact that Matt is a great tour guide and he knows those locations, the director of the movie showed up to take us to Coffin Rock. So Ed Sanchez shows up and joins us and shows us how to get to Coffin Rock. It's like, that's just freaking amazing.
I've met Edward Sanchez like a couple of times at panels and at Awesome Con. And the first time I met him, I just information had vomited all over him. And I feel kind of bad about it, but I had so many questions about Lovely Molly that I just couldn't hold it back. So I just
That film.
There's a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Movie.
Well,
and even though he was there showing his fist.
Ed doesn't mind that sort of thing. He's one of the most down to earth. I think that watching the way that he handled his business helped make me into a better director. And I'm still a rookie at directing, but you learn from people who are the best. And Ed Sanchez, man, he's just one of the best. Don't give me any spoilers.
He's a folk hero here, so in Maryland. Yeah. So you know we all love him. So you got the Mutilator 2 coming up, and I know there's a couple other things that we can't talk about yet. And so how does it feel to be semi-hot and on the indie scene right now?
I don't know. If you find somebody that is, we can ask them.
You're having a string of luck, dude. I mean, really. Go ahead.
I would prefer to say a string of luck. I like that. I think, and you know how it feels? It's surreal. I opened up the pages of Fangoria magazine and read a 3-page article about my own freaking movie. There's no way to describe that. Can you imagine? There's no way to describe that.
That's so badass.
Yeah, if you've got the new copy of Fangoria, it's the Stab cover if you're a subscriber, and it's the Black Phone cover if you're not. Pages 6, 7, and 8, man. I'm still stunned. They even have a couple of photos of particularly gnarly scenes from Terror Trips, at least ones that give me the chills still. But between Fangoria finally getting a release, selling the movie, and then immediately being hired to produce a sequel of a legendary film, I'm waiting for someone to pick me or pinch me because I got to be asleep. This can't be true.
You've come a long way from your poster at my panel.
Didn't it fall on your head?
No, but you mansplained me. I've been teasing you about that ever since.
Oh, my God, that's right. Thanks for reminding me of my misery. Curse.
But the one thing I did lead off on that whole panel is like when we had, and by the way, Richard Tanner wrote and he said, good show, and he likes Jeff and he's excited about Mutilator too. So I just thought I'd say,
yay.
Hey, Richard, what's up? The first thing that I said, it's not, because I didn't really think of teaching people to make their first film is irrelevant. You just got to go out there and make your fucking movie. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have hard, long days that you're never intending to. You're going to forget to feed your actors, and they're all going to get grumpy. You're going to have all sorts of things happen, but you just go and make it. And whatever lies, whatever happens, happens, and then you go and you make your next one. So
make sure that your first one is a short film, because I promise you, your first film is going to be really shitty. Not so much the writing. Well, not so much that you've written a shitty script or anything like that, but if you don't know what you're doing making a film and you go make your first one, it'd be a shock if you made a good one on your first trial. Yeah. I don't even want to talk about what my first short film was. It was this stupid student project that I had to do with – I don't even want to talk about it. To tell you how bad it was. The movie was called Karma, and we spelled it C-A-R-M-A because it involved a car. That's how stupid it was. Anyway. That was a tangent. But, yeah, you just go make it. Don't worry about – I mean, the fact that I'm still acknowledging this terrible, terrible movie, it doesn't matter. You go make it. You learn from your mistakes. You make a better one the next time. That's how you become a decent filmmaker.
And you are definitely on your way. I cannot wait to see what your
next thing
will be. It'll be awesome that, you'll eventually direct something else. We know you well.
I have five scripts ready to go. Go ahead. Sorry.
Nice. Five scripts. Wow. That's cool.
Five scripts.
I wanted to mention, though, the first premiere of your movie, though, because I mentioned earlier that I think Joe Bob is already knocking it out of the park with his Valentine's Day episode, the first one of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You got to meet Joe Bob, and your film played at Joe Bob's the drive-in, whatever they called that, at the Mahoning Drive-In in Pennsylvania.
Yes, the Joe Bob's Jamboree. They picked my movie to play on the screen. That string of luck that you talk about, it's starting to feel a little bit better now, I want to downplay, because I don't want to come across as, you should have heard Elizabeth had this really cocky director. I'm never going to go see his shitty movie. I'm trying to downplay it because I don't want to come across as some dick who, But, yeah, there's some good things that have been happening to me lately. I'm, still stunned that it exists,
Enjoy this moment. Dude, you can't take away from it. You're doing
Amen.
Well. Enjoy it,
Yeah.
And, we all wish, directors have their ups and downs, and this just happens to be an up period. I think you should just ride the fucking wave, man.
Thank you. I'm gonna listen to that advice. It's just, how much better can it get? It's like Joe Bob and Fangoria and my first feature film. I'm really on cloud nine. I'm trying to keep myself tamped down in case one of those bad waves hit. I don't want to just expect that these sorts of incredible things are going to keep happening, but I'm just getting lucky right now, and I'm very fortunate.
Well, Matthew Lillard, I go to his panels a lot, and I know that you have an affinity to Scream, right? And he actually said he was out of work for an entire year after Scream. He could not get work.
Wow.
So, and then all of a sudden, he gets everything again. It's just part of the game. Unfortunately, there's the show business and is the business end. Fuck the business end. We all want to make art and have a good time. But, just enjoy it. I'm so happy for you that you're doing so well. It's been fun following you and your, because you're like a little child. You're so happy. You're like, yay! Clapping. You're so cute. I know that none of my other panel, unfortunately, has had the honor of watching your movie yet, but I wanted to throw it out to my sexy witches and see if they have any questions for you.
Please.
I do. Where can we go to find out where the theatrical screenings are going to be?
That's a great question. Terror Trips is on Facebook. We have accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I also have a TikTok, but I prefer hour and a half long movies, not 30-second ones. But all of those, and it would be Terror Trips on Twitter. Yeah, it's just Terror Trips on all of them. If you want to follow me personally, Twitter's the best place to find me. Jeff from Ohio, pretty simple. And I never shut up about Terror Trips online, so if you're following me on any one of those, you will definitely hear about the screenings. And Ms. Gray, will you please give him my personal Facebook page so that he can see the screenings when I announce them on my personal page?
Absolutely. That's not a problem.
Thank you.
I'm actually surprised you guys are not, you have plenty of mutual friends, I guarantee it, on Facebook. So, including the ever so enigmatic Richard Tanner, who's listening in tonight. So thank you for listening, sir. And, like I said, he just gave a shout out to you. How about you, Raven or Aaron? Do you have any questions for our fellow director here?
Can I ask what you think about the Academy's decision regarding short films and not broadcasting them?
The short answer is it's bullshit.
Thank you.
The long answer is I know that editors were also cut out of the process.
Yes, they were.
And don't you need editors to run that show? Because all those little clips that hey, so and so is being nominated for Best Actor, and they show clips from the movie. An editor did that, like on the show. We know that editors do every single frame of every movie, but you can't do that show without editors. Tell me the makeup artists aren't insulted by this, and they're going to have to work backstage, working on the makeup of the hosts.
Right.
Complete bullshit. It's a slap in their face, and it's to their face. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, I'm never going to know anybody that's going to win a Best Actor Award. I may know a director someday, but I'll never know an actor on that level. But I've known people that have been nominated for Animated Supervisor. I've known people that have been nominated for Makeup, and I'm sure someday we're going to see Sarah Trost name on a costume design nomination. I'm positive on that someday. These are the people that deserve our love and deserve that few moments of notice so other people can, so they can give them more work and maybe inspire others to join that field of film. And it really upsets me, actually.
Me too.
So, Raven, you have a question.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm on your IMDb, and there's a trivia thing here that I need to ask you about. Are you aware of this?
True.
Did you put this trivia in?
It's true, too.
Wow.
Here's what it says, panel. On his birthday in 2014, Bruce Springsteen invited him on stage to sing the third verse of Growing Up. What's going on? Are you BFFs with Bruce?
Damn. I mean, the story that I like to tell is, yeah, I used to be in the E Street Band, but the reality of it is, Bruce does two or three sign requests a night. He'll look out into the crowd for songs to play, and you hold up your sign, and if he chooses it, they play the song, and that's it. My sign said Growing Up for my birthday, and he chose the sign, started playing it, and then for the third verse, he looks up at us and says, "Birthday boy, come on down." I went on stage. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, the reality of it is, yeah, luckiest son of a bitch in the world that night. That's for sure.
She got the posing with the boss. So
there's video of it.
So neat.
Look up Bruce Springsteen Growing Up Cincinnati, and you'll see.
On
it.
I'm on it.
Oh, geez.
And by the way, I stage dove at the end of the song. Yeah,
perfect.
That's true. I kind of regret that because I'm a big dude, but yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I think it was the right move. It's the right exit.
Yep. Bruce was kind of stunned by it. You'll see.
Human torpedo!
Awesome.
So anyway,
spoilers.
Back to our spoiler alert for Peacemaker. Did you watch Peacemaker by any chance, Jeff?
No, I haven't seen a frame of it yet. The time that I have is ridiculously small.
Yes, I know. But you are a writer, and this is a writer's show. So I think you should definitely watch it when you can fit it into your ever-so-busy schedule.
About a week before we go to set for the Mutilator 2, I'm giving myself mandatory time off so that I can just breathe and watch whatever I want. That's on my list. That and Yellow Jackets are on my list.
Excellent.
Yeah, I want to watch that too.
So, and on the film front, is there anybody that you're currently watching, other than you saw Slap's Face, which is awesome, that you would like to recommend to this audience of sexy witches?
Don't listen to what everybody says about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because it's great. Is it a great film? No, but the deaths are phenomenal. And just because the storyline has no likable characters doesn't mean it's a bad movie. Unlikable characters are fine. You know, a movie like mine, I can't get away with unlikable characters through and through, because who the hell's going to watch my movie if they can't like a character? But it's the Texas fucking Chainsaw Massacre. They're going to watch it anyway. Make them unlikable. Make it fun that they get killed because this person sucks and they deserve to die. That's how I feel about it.
It's funny because we just said that very thing on just right before you called in. Nathan was like, "Yeah," and you know he saw his family, according to him. So you know,
so, I spent over a decade as Netherworld's resident chainsaw wielding maniac. So yeah, the saw his family.
So
and I liked the movie. It was what I wanted it to be. I wanted to see some really cool death, and I did, man. I won't spoil it for your listeners, but you've seen it. You know that closing death. That's the best death I've ever seen as far as special effects goes.
The closing?
Wow. The closing where you know what I mean. It's a chainsaw, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
My
favorite one didn't even involve a chainsaw. It was the first
one.
The first person Leatherface kills. Don't say what it was.
Yep.
But the first person Leatherface kills is my favorite kill in that movie and in any movie for a while.
That was really, really good. And again, the camera really didn't hide anything yet. Like, I love Get Out. Top 10 horror movie of all time for me. But there is not a single instance of on-screen violence in that movie. Everything that they do violent is either assumed or shadowed. Like, that guy got beat over the head with a croquet ball, but you never saw it connecting. You just saw the ball come up to the sky, and it's covered in blood.
Not even the antlers through the chest? No, I'm trying to replay the movie in my head here.
They never showed the on-screen violence. You saw the after effect.
Wow.
True.
I need to rewatch that.
They did the old school shadow in the corner thing, right? So
And even in Get Out, when they're operating on the guy, you never see scalpel go into blood. It's sort of like this little layer of protection around you. You can see blood, but you don't see the scalpel go into skin. Jordan Peele is brilliant, but that was great. You know, he did exactly what I believe Psycho did. Tons of scary moments, no real violence on screen.
I also want to say, we're talking about Get Out. The new trailer for Nope, his alien invasion movie, looks fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes. I can't wait.
It does look like fun.
Yeah. I also have to say, and I'm begrudgingly saying this, because I went to go see Jackass with Nathan and my daughter. Yes, I took the evil genius to see Jackass. Don't go there. But I'm a great mom. I saw Ty West's trailer for X. I have been burned many times by Ty West. I am not a huge fan of Ty West movies. I will say that was the best trailer I have seen of his to date. It was really, really good. We got the red brand. We got the red band trailer, and it was the look of it, very much that grimy yet polished 70s look that you got from movies. You know, very much indicative of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, the documentarian style. The subject matter looks cool. I might begrudgingly end up going to see it.
I refer to it as the Porn Saw Massacre.
It might be
because
it's film.
It just feels like they're filming a porn movie right next to Leatherface, and okay, that's what happened. That's just what it feels like to me. But I'm gonna go nuts over that movie too. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, so cool. So we do have stuff to look forward to in your busy schedule. And so where is your next screening, if we may ask? Plug your stuff.
I'm not sure yet. Well, with COVID, we got pushed just a little bit. We had them lined up, and they were going to be, I believe there was going to be 10 in the first week and then more if those were successful. But we had to push because theater owners were really not yet feeling comfortable about single night screenings. With the numbers going down, especially in Ohio right now, it's looking like we might be able to do it sooner than later, but I don't know when the next screening is. I'll be happy to give you that schedule. I will definitely.
Yeah, so cool. I'm really happy you came on tonight and
I'm glad
you talked about your film, and you know, I'm sure we're going to bump heads some point in the person, and, you know, we always seem to do it every couple of weeks.
Yes, we do.
So, before you go, I'm going to have a special caller call on the line. And,
oh, boy.
It has nothing to do with your movie, but they wanted to call in.
Go ahead.
Hold on. This is your life. Oh, hold on. Anyway, plug your stuff some more. Hold on. Dead air. Oh, no. The world's coming to an end. Dead air. I actually have phobias of dead air. I dream of dead air in my sleep. It's terrible. All right, come on. But anyway, we got some big news on the Sexy Witch's End. So we're making a major announcement. All right, there you go. Go to the other room. So we don't echo. All right. So, Jeff, thank you for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate you being on the show. And please come on again. And, you know, you can always, when you know the show's coming up and you have always come on and plug your stuff, even if it's just for a few minutes.
Yay.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, all right. So, 301 area code. Welcome. You're on with the Sexy Witches. Hello.
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 Who is this?
This is the Evil Genius.
Hi, Evil Genius.
Hi, Evil
Genius.
Hello,
Evil Genius is here.
So you have a big announcement, Evil Genius, do you not?
I'd say it's not big, but it's giant.
That's actually probably a good way to say it, actually. Because, yeah, it might be small in the big world scheme, but for you, it's a big deal. And what is your big deal?
Well, I got into the play at my local children's theater.
Uh-huh. And what is that play? And what role is it?
It is Annie, and I got Frederick
Franklin.
Delano Roosevelt.
There you go. Very good.
The notorious FDR.
Yeah.
FDR, American badass.
So you are, I know, right? So you are the president.
Yes.
And you had your first rehearsal win.
Yesterday.
Ooh,
boy.
So Jeff, we got an up-and-coming actress in our actor or actress. They can play both sides. So, you know, if you ever need a precocious 12-year-old, you got one.
Multifaceted. I love it.
Don't come much more precocious.
Wait, Wait, weren't you talking about movies right before I joined the call?
Oh, we always are talking about movies. Yes.
Well, I mean, like, not movies, directors. Like, there's a director in here that's doing quite well.
Yeah, well, that's yes. Yeah, Jeff, say hi to my evil genius.
Hello, evil genius. Nice to meet you.
Yeah,
hello,
so,
nice to meet you, too.
So, tell us about your rehearsal real quick.
It was pretty fun. The head huntress, or my partner in crime, a.k.a. my mother, came there for the first half of it. So, and I talked about, like, the scripts and what they have the expectations of us, code of conduct, all, like, the usual presentation stuff you have at the start of stuff. And then afterwards, they took the parents out to the side and did the parent thing, and they took the kids on stage, and then we did a read-through, and we got all the way through to the end of Act 1, finished Act 1, and tomorrow we're going to pick up at Act 2. But right before we left, we did this, like, silk around thing to get to know each other, so, like, introduced your name, pronouns, and something just like a fact about yourself, something fun about yourself. So we went around and did that, and I ended up getting the whole place laugh, including the director, by just saying, and if what's about me is I'm the best.
Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you're doing well, and good luck. All of us on here are – it's kind of neat because, you know, we're all different levels of our careers. You're definitely starting out at the very beginning. Jeff is starting to hit a career peak and high, and sexy witches keep rolling around. So thank you for calling in for a few minutes, Evil Genius, and we'll talk in on the flip side later, okay?
Okay, bye.
Bye. And
Jeff, hi, Evil Genius. Congratulations.
Yeah, so she wanted to call. They wanted to call in, and Jeff, thank you for staying
right
online
on.
Just for a minute.
That's really sweet. Yes, I'm happy to.
Yes, so we'll talk, I'm sure, on the Facebooks. Once again, plug your stuff. Where can they contact you, or if they want, so they can keep in contact with you on the
yes.
Twitter.
Terror Trips on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. But if you want to get more information on Twitter, go to Jeff from Ohio. That's where I spend most of my time when I'm promoting, is on Jeff from Ohio on Twitter.
Well, thank you,
got
Jeff.
It.
I'm
thank
glad.
You.
And I will make sure I give that stuff to Nathan as soon as we're off air tonight. And
I already sent you a friend request.
Oh,
yeah, I already see it on Facebook there.
They already take care of each other. I mean, come on. Well, like I said, okay, so how many mutual friends did you have between each other?
55.
55. I knew it. There was no way you didn't. So most excellent. We are going to change topics, Jeff, so I'm going to let you go. But
I miss you already.
You're never very far away. And, you know, once again, you can welcome to call in and rap about anything. If you like the subject matter, you just want to bitch about the subject matter, like we're going to have an Oscars bitch coming up. So you're more welcome to
yay.
Call in on that. And we're even going to have a Nightmare Alley episode coming up theoretically soon with someone that worked on that. So, you know, so keep
hell
an eye
yeah.
out. You're welcome to guest or co-host anytime.
Well, I'm going to come on and talk about Titanic, but I have to watch it first because I don't know how that ends.
Oh, okay. Spoiler.
It's a joke. The ship sinks, people. The ship sinks.
See, the ship sinks.
Spoiler.
He's a guy. all the twist endings.
All right, thank you. Sorry.
Have a good one, and congratulations again that your movie is doing so well.
Thank you very much. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, Jeff.
Thank you.
Good
bye.
Night.
Bye. So that was Jeff Seaman in Terror Trips.
Yay.
I've seen it. It is actually a pretty darn good film. And it's one of those films that horror films where the, you know, shows that monsters, I love movies with monsters, but sometimes it's the people that are the monsters. So it's
mm-hmm.
a pretty good film. Hold on just a second. Discuss I don't know. I remember a coffee talk where they always give you an awesome subject. And then
the Holy Roman Empire was neither Holy Roman nor Empire. Discussed.
Talk among yourself. I'll be right back.
I got something to throw out there. I watched a film a couple weeks ago. It was last week. Catwoman, Hunted, a new animated flick from DC. I was not a big fan because I don't like anime, but if you're a fan of that art style, this will probably be right up your alley. And it was very jazz influenced as well. Lots of a jazz score almost throughout the entire thing with the action scenes kind of set to the tempo and everything. Really interesting flick. Like I said, the art style, not really my cup of tea, but if you're into anime, you will totally dig this.
Where'd you see it?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Where'd you see it?
It's available on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime.
Excellent.
Speaking of Amazon Prime, I started watching the season 4 of The Marvelous Maisel on Amazon Prime, and it's true to form as the last three seasons. So it's funny because if you listen to an episode a couple of seasons back, you'll hear me bitching about what the fuck is this show, because it was everywhere on the Tony Awards, and I had no idea, but I am totally hooked. And it's kind of reminiscent of my own life because it's about a woman that was summarily dumped by her husband, and the way she gets through it is she ends up getting drunk, meeting Lenny Bruce, and becoming a stand-up comedian. So, I'm all for those things. So, I mean, I do have to say on a personal note, my divorce officially went through on Tuesday of last week. It's not final. It's ratified, but not finalized yet. The final paperwork is going through the courts right now. So I am now a single woman. So, and Aaron,
she's back on the market again.
But I want to say, Aaron, it was an honor to be your cousin for as long as I was.
You'll always be my cousin.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. You don't become an ex-cousin.
I love you, and I love Nat so much, and I hope we can – I really want to keep you in my life, not just on the podcast. I mean, you're my partner in crime.
Oh, yeah.
Who's going to go to San Diego Comic-Con with me? You know?
Well, San Diego Comic-Con, and we've got D23, the Disney Expo, finally, after years and years. We've got Star Wars Celebration coming back eventually. You'll be out here again.
The evil genius is making me tea right now, so that's very nice. So
lovely. So, what kind of tea are you doing?
Well rested tea, which is Trader Joe's version of sleepy time, to be exact.
We have been doing the Mandalorian black tea, and obviously I got it just for the label, although it is from Republic of Tea, and they do good teas. But we're really liking it. We ordered it a second time. Before I ordered the Luke Skywalker or the Grogu or the Fennec Shand labels.
That's so funny. And speaking of Grogu, and this will segment into our professional wrestling, one thing I've learned about hanging out with professional wrestlers, a lot of them are horror geeks, not surprising there, but they're just nerds in general out there. This one fan recently where he was wearing a shirt that looked like he had Grogu in a baby Bjorn. It was pretty funny. So I just it's been an interesting experience, like hanging out with wrestlers and wrestling fans. So Aaron and Miss Enchantress Raven, we are going to jump into a wrestling segment for the next back half of the show. You're welcome to stay on if you want. If not, you're also welcome to clock out. So it's your choice one way or another.
Thank you. I'm going to clock out and spend time with Nat, who sends big love, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for having me on again. Enjoyed it.
Always, and I'm not sure when the next show is going to be. It's probably going to be the 16th, and then we're going to have one on the 30th, which would be right after the Oscars. So we got to do an Oscars. So Raven, same question. And if you can go on that fact-finding mission for the Nightmare Alley thing, those are the dates that you can offer them.
Okay.
Either one of them.
No problem. I'll send that out. My stepmom bought me Depression Taco Bell, so I think I'm going to go eat that. But I think I'll listen. I'll listen to you guys, but I won't be on the line.
Okay, so much love to my sexy witches, and we'll see you in a couple weeks, or talk to you in a couple weeks.
Awesome.
Keep seeing Steve.
Have a fun show.
Absolutely. Take it easy, y'all.
Good night. Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
God luck and good speed.
So, those are my peeps. They're awesome, but now we're down to two. It's my dirty southern sorcerer. And we actually have much to discuss because the wrestling world is starting to blow up. I mean, even tonight's AEW episode had a lot going down. First of all, the Forbidden Door has been completely smashed open, and everyone is on everybody's promotions now. I just watched the Prestige, which is the big promotion in the Pacific Northwest in Portland, and they had their first show in 2 years last week. One of our friends on the show, Eric Martin, he doesn't like to call in very much, but he was there. He got to meet Danhausen, who was the general manager at that show, which is like, I didn't, you know, how can you be a guest general manager? But I guess it's possible, right?
They had to throw massive bags of monies at him for that.
Oh, I'm sure. The booking was pretty good because, once again, you had Malachi Black and what's the guy's name that was
Davey
the headliner?
Richards.
Davey Richards. And I will say that was one of the best matches I've seen Malachi in. It was technical, it was fast, and it was brutal. So can you tell me a little bit about the guy he was wrestling? And also my boy Dalton Castle was on the show, and one of the people were like, "You have the best ass in wrestling," and he kind of looks at a foot and goes, "Yeah, no, you're right." It was one of my favorite moments of the night. So,
Dalton Castle's one of the most entertaining dudes, like, just bar none. He has his character and he plays it to the hilt, and he is hilarious. Davey Richards, he broke into Ring of Honor as a tag team with Eddie Edwards called the American Wolves, who had amazing battles with the Briscoes and Kevin Steen and El Generico. Then they broke up and feuded over the titles. And Davey Richards is a badass, just flat out. He is a badass. He was a tag team partner of Super Dragon back in PWG for a long time, and known for having some of the hardest kicks in wrestling, which is why it was very interesting pairing him up with Malachi Black.
That was a fast match. The move and holds, they kept changing every few seconds. And it was almost hard to keep up with them. There was no real downtime in that match. I was very impressed with it. And, of course, we got a walk-on with Brody King, and that was cool. It's glad to see that wrestling is starting after, you know, COVID almost killed wrestling. I'm pleased to tell you that the Prestige had their biggest turnout in years and sold out the venue. So
nothing,
congratulations.
Nothing can kill wrestling. Nothing can kill wrestling.
So shout out.
Was really, for a long time there, wrestling was one of the very, very few forms of live entertainment that was running at the height of the pandemic.
Yeah, even with the limited crowds. I mean, even AEW had a scattering of people when they were in Florida, you know, because you had to have some. But, you know, it really did suffer, though, having limited crowds, because, boy, do they feed off the energy. And, you know, and you know it, but you really didn't realize it till they got the crowds back. And where I noticed the most was Double or Nothing when Jungle Boy came on. That was his first time wrestling with a crowd. And he actually had to stop and was like, oh my God, they're singing my song. And he's like, okay. And he goes running in, you know, but it was, you know, it took him back. Like, he had never actually experienced that on that level since before COVID. And it was like so cool, because I know he did some smaller venues, but nothing like that. So, you know, that's kind of amazing. And speaking of Jungle Boy, he did not make Wrestling Observer, any of the lists. Actually, I think he did, but Most Improved, like at number 5. But I wasn't going to talk about
He didn't win anything.
No, he didn't win anything. But he's up for, but he's currently the tag team champion with Luchasaurus, Jurassic Express. So, you know, took it away from the Luchas, but Rey Fénix, well, who is a winner, by the way. We'll talk about that in a minute. He is still down for the count. We have not seen him come back. So please get better. But we did see the rise of Penta's dark character. What was it? Penta Ochoro. Or
Oscuro.
Ochoro. Oscuro, that's right. So I hope it's another bitchin' action figure on your wall.
Oh, absolutely. I need all the Penta figures, all the bad bootlegs, all the good AEW ones. But yeah, it's kind of a redux of Penta's darker character that he was in Lucha Underground, which is where I first saw him, where I first, you know, fell in love with his act. So I'm really excited that he's bringing that character back.
So that was really weird, because I watched some of him in Lucha Underground, and he used to go and break people's arms at the end of his matches as a honor to his teacher. And then The big plot twist is that he wrestles someone, loses, and he breaks his own arm. And it turns out it's his teacher. I was like, oh, you know, I forget.
That match was also the first match ever on regular cable television to use light tubes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Penta was the first person on TV to hit someone with a light tube.
Nice. So David Metzler is, I don't know, for some reason, the leading voice of critics for wrestling, and he is the he laughs. We won't go there. We'll be respectful here. But he has the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and then they have a winners. They vote for a winners list. Very, you know, very much like Mangoria has open votes for Chainsaws, for best horror film, best feature, first feature is the stylist. Vote for that, please. But they came out with their list. Over the weekend, and I thought we'd go over it real quick. We're not going to go to all the runners up, but except for I am going to talk about the runners up for Wrestler of the Year. Number one, not surprising, and he was also on many lists actually, is Kenny Omega is number one on everybody's list. Like, when is he not number one? He hasn't been not number one in years.
Well, you knew he was going to be number one on Meltzer's list, because Meltzer has the biggest hard-on for Kenny Omega, like, ever. But you can't, like, especially earlier in the year when he was doing the belt collector thing and was having incredible matches in, like, 5 different promotions at the same time. Like, you really can't argue that, you know, well, yeah, you could if you want to, but there are, you know, maybe only a couple of dudes. But I can't find any kind of grudge with naming Kenny Omega Wrestler of the Year.
No, and he was also number one on, I always mess it up, the PW, was it? PWI list.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So he was number one on that list as well. And I'll tell you, I never quite understood the Kenny Omega thing until I saw him live in Philadelphia last year. And then everything changed. I was like, he is so amazing. His charisma just, he's a shining beacon in the ring, and he's also extremely subtly responsive to his audience, and you can't read that on the camera at all. But he is totally engaged with the audience as he's doing these amazing moves. So I you can't really say that Kenny Omega doesn't deserve to be on the top 10 list. So,
absolutely not.
Now, number two is kind of an interesting Roman Reigns, and that's WWE, correct? He's number
yes.
two. And then Shingo Takagi of New Japan Pro Wrestling is number three.
That's my boy right there.
Yeah, I even knew what promotions they're from. I'm learning. Brian Danielson's number four, obviously AEW. I always mess up this guy's name, Utami Hashishita, also of New Japan, is number five. I can get those Japanese names sometimes. CM Punk is number six. Shuri is number seven. Hangman Adam Page is number eight. And then last but not least is let's see if I can do this one. Kashiko Nakajima. Was that close?
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's number
Absolutely.
Nine. And number 10, rearing up the rear, is John Moxley. So Moxley is still running into it. And, you know, Moxley might not be the best wrestler, but he is a lot of fun to watch live. I really enjoy Moxley. And I love how he walks through the audience. And I got to see him walk through the audience live this year with Bryan Danielson standing next to him. And that was just such a geeky moment. So I'll give John Moxley, even though there's other wrestlers I would have put in his place, I don't mind that he's there, if you know what I'm saying.
No, absolutely. Even if you don't really dig his wrestling, because I know a lot of people that he's not their cup of tea, you cannot deny that dude is over as hell.
He is, and he held a belt for a brief period of time in GCW, which is the largest independent wrestling promotion, and we'll get to Game Changer Wrestling in a few minutes here.
He is currently the GCW heavyweight champion.
Is he still heavyweight champion?
Yes, he is.
Oh, my God. And I know that, Nick Gage is now a tag team champion.
With Matt Tremont, yes.
With Matt Tremont, which is, awesome for Matt. Nick Gage, okay, you got a belt. Matt Tremont getting a belt, awesome, right?
He is one of the most decorated wrestlers in American Deathmatch history. But that's one of the titles he has not held. So I'm glad to see him get that.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so let's go on to some of the other ones. Tag Team of the Year was the Young Bucks, even though I would give it to the Lucha Bros.
There's about five teams that if you had named any one of them Tag Team of the Year, I would be like, oh, okay, I can see that.
But I understand.
Yeah, you got FTR, the Briscoes, the Lucha Bros. I mean, you've got just so many great tag teams out there right now, which is awesome because tag team wrestling was on its ass there for a while, but it's really coming back in a big way.
Young Bucks followed up by Best on Interview. So Best on the Stick this year, big surprise, was MJF. I don't think anybody can argue that. I mean, he really is. Right now, he's got this stick battle, which will eventually be a battle at the Revolution in a couple weeks with CM Punk. And so you put the two best people on the stick together. It's been nothing but golden nuggets all the way through, including tonight, where MJF actually, dropped his persona and got real for a few moments and even cried. I've never seen, that he can actually pull that off. Like he is a really good actor. I would like to see him actually do some acting, maybe move on like The Rock or any of them and actually have some feature roles. Cause I mean, he really all through his tenure and the Stadium Stampede, good his acting was in that, even though he's throwing these amazing moves, he's still completely in character and he's still got all this stuff going for him. So you can't really say anything about MJF is the best. I would also, they don't give one for it. Best heat, I would say, would probably also be MJF. So he would be my favorite.
The only people I might put anywhere close to him on getting heat would be RSP earlier in the year, Ricky Shane Page. MJF, due to just how consistent he has been this year, he's put on amazing matches. That Darby Allin match he had was outstanding. And just he is an amazing character. You don't see a lot of people with that dedication to their character anymore. Social media, in-person interviews, when he's at conventions, the dude never drops kayfabe. It's awesome.
So when he came out tonight and talked about, like, him growing up as a Jewish kid in football with ADHD and wrestling and CM Punk is what got him through it, you could tell there was some truth to all of that. And CM Punk's response to that was, you can't get better promos. And, yeah, he cheats a lot on his wrestling matches, but I wanted to point out that Chris Jericho and him wrestled this year, and that was a clean over. So, you know, the bookings are just phenomenal. And we'll talk about booking of the year because we know who's booking, and he won, but we're not there yet. So let's move on. MJF, I could literally talk for hours about MJF and how awesome he is. And
One last thing about MJF, speaking of the way they're booking him, I love the way they are slow burning this whole Wardlow thing.
Yeah, I know. I thought it would be moved faster, but it hasn't. Speaking of Wardlow, you know, got that Revolution ladder match with him and Powerhouse Hobbs and with Keith Lee. That
ladder hoss fight.
You're gonna have the ring is just gonna collapse under the weight of those people.
Oh yeah. They better have some big ass ladders.
They're not even going to climb ladders. They're just going to fold them up and swing them at each other.
Keith Lee's just going to throw someone up there to grab the belt.
Yeah, it's going to be over. We'll see who the other people are. They haven't announced them yet, so we got a couple of weeks on that. The match of the year, I completely 100% agree with this because this was my favorite match of the year. And it's Young Bucks versus the Lucha Bros for the title at All Out in the steel cage. Absolutely one of my favorite matches of the year. And it also has a note that this was a unanimous vote of the voters. So I find that interesting that was the one because there was a runner-up, I thought, that I think Metzler put that in, and that was Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson, that two-hour match they did together. I think it was them, right? Two-hour match they did together that ended up as a draw.
The 60-minute Broadway, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a long-ass match.
My vote for last year, and like I said, was Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa in the lights-out match.
That was a really good match, too. I agree, but I still – that was – I've watched the Young Bucks Lucha Bros ones multiple times, so that was my favorite of the year. Feud of the year is Kenny Omega versus Hangman Adam Page, which also had peaked out at All Out. Most improved is Ty Conti, speaking of which. Ty Conti, which is she hits right now, is beefing with Jade Cargill.
Want to throw out there right quick, my vote for feud of the year would have gone for Murder Grandpa versus America.
Minoru Suzuki versus everyone. Yeah,
yes.
I know. It was pretty awesome. And the free match that they showed on YouTube of him and Bryan Danielson was a highlight of the year also, I thought.
You want to watch two dudes have a great time beating the ever-living shit out of each other. That's it right there.
They weren't even wrestling. They were just chopping each other and then sticking their tongues out. That was it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
and you
could tell they were
redder.
Having the time of their lives in there.
Oh my God, it was so funny. Oh, my murdered grandpa. He's my boy. I'm so glad that he's at that tour of America this year because more people needed to see him alive. And I still wish I could have almost did. Even though I had already seen AEW the week before, I could have gone back up to Philly and saw him up there, and I didn't. I didn't because I knew you would hate me forever if I did.
He is coming back to America in the summer. So we don't know where he's going to be, but may have to make that happen.
Fingers crossed it's Atlanta. So
crossed.
All right. So Ty Conti's most improved, which I actually think is well-earned because, yeah, she's gorgeous. And, you can't take away from the her abs and pecs. I mean, oh, my gosh. But she actually is become a very popular wrestler, and for good reason. And I would like to see that some women popped up in some of these as number one.
My vote for most improved would have been Jade Cargill. And what I like about that is the winner and the one I would have picked are both in AEW's women's division. And that was AEW's major weak point when it started. So I like that some of the most improved are in that division. So they're bringing it up, and they're actually building a really good women's division on that show.
Didn't Kenny Omega actually start booking the women's division himself?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it was like a switch flipped, and you started getting, like, you know, I started actually paying attention, because I'll be honest with you, that was usually my bathroom break. The women's mm-hmm. matches were on, I'd go to the bathroom, but I am not anymore. And they've had headlining, and, you know, Jade Cargill was the headliner at the last AEW show I saw. So that was awesome. So now, this is not an AEW person, but most underrated this year is Ricochet.
Oh, Ricochet, man. It is criminal what WWE is doing with that guy. And you know what they're doing with him? Nothing. This guy is amazing. Like, he's a lot like Phoenix and Pac and, like, the guys that physics and Sammy that physics just don't apply to. But he's the first person I ever saw pull off a double moonsault. Like, the dude's incredible and could be putting on banger matches all over the place. And he's doing 2.5-minute jobs on WWE TV. It's terrible.
Well, but obviously the fans love him here. Rookie of the Year, because Ty Conti was most improved, Rookie of the Year went to Jade Cargill. So, and I would completely agree with that, because she comes on like a beast in the beginning. You're like, who is this mm-hmm. chick? But, you know, now she's actually, like, I'm seeing her do moonsaults, and, you know, she's starting to actually wrestle. And I don't think that if she was in WWE, they would have given her the space to develop her craft like they are in AEW. So
no,
that
was cool. She was so green when she started that we've gotten to watch her learn to wrestle in real time, which is cool.
And her title match with Thunder Rosa was very satisfying, and they still have a good heat going on to this day. So you know, I'll bring on some more of that. I'm all about that. So best non-wrestler, and you'll have to give me more information why he deserves it, Paul Heyman.
Because, see, I don't think about WWE a lot because I don't watch their programming. But now that I think about it, if I was going to put anyone as neck and neck with MJF on the mic, it's Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman is the master storyteller of all master storytellers. I mean, all the way up through his days as Paulie Dangerously, up through running ECW, now being, you know, the advocate for Brock Lesnar, and then his work with Roman Reigns. Like, he has been absolutely amazing. You put a mic in that guy's hand and he will deliver an entertaining segment every last time. I don't think I've ever seen him put in a dud performance.
You know, though, honestly, if I was going to, and this is not a person on the stick, but if I was going to say my favorite non-wrestler, it would be Aubrey Edwards. I love her so much, and I wish she was on this list somehow. They don't have a Best Ref award, and maybe they should.
Horrible. They should. Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Although, but I don't think it would be like Aubrey Edwards and then everybody else, you know?
So, not surprising, Best Announcer of the Year is Mr. Excalibur
Me.
Himself. You are. But the person that you aspire to, the one that influences your vision, Excalibur, has won this award. And they also give a worst announcer who went to Corey Graves.
I disagree. Kevin Gill needs that one. But
okay. I don't know Corey Graves very well, so I can't say one way or another. And I want him on the show, so I'm not going to say anything bad.
I don't really think Corey's bad. He just does commentary on a very bad show.
Oh, and you know exactly who the worst person on the stick in the booth is, and that is the Snuggles.
I wasn't going to say it, but.
You know, you've already said your piece on that one. So, all right. So I'm just going to go all three of these together. Best Booker, Promoter of the Year, and Promotion of the Year all went to AEW. So Tony Khan, and AEW. So big surprise, Tony Khan wins Best Booker, because honestly, he is the best booker out there of the mainstream wrestling of the corporate ones. Because, I mean, really, I would actually give a shout out to the guy who rested, what's his name, Marino of IWA. I also think he's a really good booker.
Danny D'Amato.
Danny D'Amato. I always fuck up his name, too. That's so terrible at it. But I really appreciate Danny D'Amato as a booker because, I mean, DCW books some good matches, but I find myself entertained by all the IWA matches. So it may be a runner-up to the guy who does Masters of Pain. So that was also one of my favorite tournaments of the year. They don't have a tournament of the year award. They should. Okay, so, and of course, Best Weekly TV Show went to Dynamite. Big surprise there. Best Gimmick goes to Roman Reigns, but they also have a worst gimmick, and it's Alexa Bliss. I don't know who that is.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Alex, basically, when they got rid of Bray Wyatt, they tried to give his gimmick to Alexa Bliss, and it just was not suited for her, and it was not good. And it was spoopy, you know, the whole, you know, weird, dark kind of stuff that I usually dig in wrestling, but it was not, it didn't work at all.
It's not Abaddon cool.
No, definitely not Abaddon cool.
Okay, so best pro. This is one actually I find interesting. They give an award for best pro wrestling book, and it went to John Moxley's Mox book, memoir. So I actually am kind of curious about that because there'll be a whole section on deathmatch wrestling. So that might be cool.
I want to throw out one that I'm actually have ordered and I'm waiting on, but it's. I listened to the audiobook. It was the best wrestling book last year. I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote it, but it's called Blood and Fire. It's a history of the Sheik. And not the Iron Sheik, but the Sheik, like Sabu's uncle, the Sheik. And it's fantastic. So if you're a fan of old school hardcore wrestling, please, I implore you, check that one out.
So excellent. So two good book suggestions right there. Dark Side of the Ring, of course, run pro wrestling documentary, in particular their episodes on Brian Pillman, which I will tell you, by the time of the second half of the Brian Pillman story, I was a blubbering mess and cried my eyes out, wanted to hug Jericho, wanted to hug everybody. I mean, he did some amazing work on that episode and brought a family back together on top of it. So I see why that got the that particular episode's on the list of a very strong season, by the way.
Absolutely, and the thing about this season, it hit on a lot of stuff people didn't know. Like, I didn't know anything about Johnny K-9. The vast majority of people had no idea what FMW was or XPW. I mean, it got into a lot of, like, pretty obscure stuff, but it was stuff like you don't have to even be a wrestling fan or know about any of these things for the shows to be compelling and take amazing stories and tell them with an incredible amount of skill.
So we're looking forward to the next season of Dark Side of the Ring. Best wrestling maneuver went to Adam Page's Buckshot Lariat, which is a very fun thing to see live. And he did it earlier today on Dynamite. I can understand why. There's a couple others I would say is also good, like Malachi Black's finishing dropkick is one of the most brutal finishers I've ever seen. You also have the Iron Cross from Lance Archer. I'd put that in there too. I mean, it's funny. Go ahead.
I will see. The thing is, every year that Homicide is an active wrestler, the Cop Killer will get my vote as the coolest move in wrestling. So until he retires, no one else has a chance.
Okay, I validate that. And seeing Homicide twice, he's actually a lot of fun to watch live. So awesome. Worst television show went to Raw. What kind of a universe are we living in, Nathan?
Man, it's all topsy-turvy now, isn't it? Almost feels like the 90s again. Remember when... But what I keep hoping is going to happen. See, what happened was back in the 90s, Raw sucked. Another wrestling show came in and started kicking WWE's ass, and all of a sudden they were like, "Oh, we got to do something about this," and Raw became amazing. I don't see it happening, unfortunately, this time around, but I would love for the competition from AEW to bring out the best in WWE.
There was a time where it didn't matter what I was doing, if I was doing homework, if I was at the library, if I was in a movie and I was late for Raw, I would stop and go. and watch Raw.
Yep.
I would watch Gorilla Monsoon and Brian the Brain Heenan every Monday night. You know, and now Raw is considered one of the worst shows on television. It's not even as good as NXT. Like, what the fuck? What happened here?
Record low ratings.
You know, it's sad, actually. I don't want it. Like, as much as I'm happy AEW is doing so well, I actually don't want to see WWE crashing and burning the way it is.
No, but problem is they keep taking all the, like, I won't say all, because they have some amazing talent over there. But they keep taking all the amazing stars they could be building for tomorrow and just delivering them on a silver platter to AEW.
Well, anyway, well, we can rock on that a little bit more later. Okay, so worst worked, I'm going to use the word worked, match of the year is The Miz versus Damian Priest in Backlash. I have no idea what that means. That was on 5/16 of last year. So
I don't know either, but if The Miz was in it, I like Damian Priest, but if The Miz was in it, yeah, I'll say, yeah, it was probably badly worked.
Worst feud of the year was Randy Orton versus The Fiend and Alexa Bliss.
Oh, God. God damn it, Randall.
Yeah. Worst promotion of the year was WWE. Best
shocking.
Major promotion was AEW. That list is interesting because WWE is number 5 on the runner-ups, and New Japan Strong was number 2. Or number 3. It was up there. I was like, whoa, you know, and so was Game Changer Wrestler. It was actually GCW was on that list. So I was kind of surprised, you know, like, so once again, how is WWE falling from grace so terribly? Worst major wrestling show is the Survivor Series. And the best one was All Out. Which is, yes, I would say All Out was the best pay-per-view I have seen in years. That was better than any of their other ones. You know, not just the wrestling, the overarching story through the whole episode, the whole show, leading to Hangman and Omega's title match was really good writing on top of everything else.
No, I agree. I completely agree with that being number one of the year.
Yeah, we talked about
totally.
That before. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't know what this means, but most disgusting promotional tactic. WWE firing wrestlers during a pandemic while setting profit records.
Yeah. I wouldn't call that a promotional tactic. It's just
yeah, that's what
dick
I'm not
move.
Sure that means.
dick move. The
yeah,
WWE,
but, you know,
like, the day that they have their investors meeting and report record profit margins, they cut 35 wrestlers for budgetary reasons.
Including Bryan Danielson, but we benefited from that. So,
oh, God, and Keith Lee.
You know, so, okay,
and,
well, you know.
And Adam Cole, and Kyle O'Reilly,
Adam Cole
and Bobby Fish,
over.
And just a ton of people.
And those are all solid wrestlers or have big fan bases. You know, it's kind of amazing. Bruiser Brody Award went to Jon Moxley for best brawler. Best high flyer.
Schlatt should have got that.
Well, yeah. These are all mainstream names anyways. Best flyer, I 100% agree with this, Rey Fénix. Yeah, he's my
yep.
favorite wrestler for a reason. Best United States Canadian MVP goes to Kenny Omega and Japanese Shingo Takagi. Can't really argue with that at all.
Nope.
Mexico, El Hijo del Vikingo.
That dude tore it up this year.
Yeah, so Europe, Will Ospreay, my boy Will Ospreay, love him. Hodge Awards, the non-heavyweight MVP, went to Darby Allin. So I might have put Sammy Guevara there, but I think Darby Allin's totally acceptable for either one. So
Sammy has really come on strong in like the last half of the year, I'd say. But overall, through like the entire course of the year, I'd say you can't really argue with giving that one to Darby.
Yeah, not really. Women's wrestling MVP went to Utami Hayashishida. Again, Utami, and she's actually going to make a appearance on Prestige in the May. So
oh,
she's
nice.
About to do an American tour. So see, I did my homework. Woo-hoo. Beck's box office draw, and this is so obvious because the ratings were also the biggest they've had on AEW for a Dynamite show, not a pay-per-view, was CM Punk's return in Chicago. Feud of the year, once again, Kenny Omega and Adam Page winning that. Most charismatic on the stick is CM Punk. Yeah, pretty much. And the Bryan Danielson Award guest for best technical wrestler went to who this year?
It's quite a feat to get the award named after you.
Yeah, Bryan Danielson. So that's it. That's the awards. And I just wanted to read those with you because they are kind of – it was a fun list to go through. And I think that, you know, there's a couple maybe we would have – you and I might have, like, played with or shuffled around. But it's a pretty solid, honest list. I still am kind of blown away that WWE is falling from grace so hard. Sure, the nostalgia factor of WrestleMania will always bring people in, but that they shouldn't be relying on people's memories of the good old days to keep their ratings up.
Last year, well, I will say it this way, even though I don't watch WWE, I still watch, like you said, the nostalgia factor for WrestleMania is just ridiculous. Last year was the first year I didn't watch WrestleMania in 2 decades.
That's
how,
saying a lot. You watch everything.
Yeah, that's how little WWE has done to make me, and apparently the rest of the wrestling fans, give a shit about their product.
But, you know, the next time that we watch wrestling together, it's not going to be a major promotion. It's going to be the biggest independent promotion in the United States because we are going in 2 weeks on March 12th to Game Changer Wrestling, GCW's first appearance in Atlanta.
Yep, finally going to get to see some GCW, and it's at Center Stage Theater, which has such a long history with wrestling. And I think it's really cool Game Changer's making their debut at that particular venue.
Now, they haven't announced many actual matches yet, but you did get read a list of – they announced two, and you've read a list of the people that are going to possibly make appearances.
Yes, at that show, we have Blake Christian versus Jonathan Gresham, which is going to be – I mean, that's the ROH champion versus a dude who has been tearing up in New Japan all year, which is
– And I saw John Gresham win the title live at Ring of Honor last year, so this will be awesome to see him again.
Yep. And I'll be watching him tomorrow night at Terminus live defend that title against Santana.
That's going to be a kick-ass match.
Yep. And let's see, AR Fox, one of the best high flyers that has ever been in the game, is going to be taking on the rookie sensation, Nick Wayne.
Which is the fetus that wrestles. I mean, he's 16 years old, and we just saw him on Prestige as well get his ass kicked, but he's still, and he's also just signed with AEW, so he hasn't made his official appearance, I don't think, yet. But we're gonna see him soon on. I have a feeling he's gonna show up at the ladder match. Like, he'll be this little tiny 16-year-old dude in all these big hoss people. He's terrible.
And he'll be staring Wardlow straight in the knee. But
can you imagine the height that Keith Lee could get by throwing that kid across the stage?
Dear God. Also appearing on this card, we have a list here. Effie, Matt Cardona, Allie Catch, SGC, AJ Gray, Gringo Loco, Tony Deppen, Joey Janela. But at the bottom of this list, it says Atticus Kogar.
Yeah,
but I kind of doubt we'll see him.
Why don't you tell our audience, Atticus Kogar is actually one of the hottest up-and-coming wrestlers on the deathmatch scene, and he's been getting bigger every day. Why don't you tell him a little bit about this controversy that suddenly appeared in the last week or two?
Well, I believe it was last week. There was a doubleheader, H2O and GCW, and he left for the GCW show. Apparently there's a lot of friction between Brett Lauderdale and Atticus Kogar, which is kind of interesting because he had a falling out with Ricky Shane Page earlier this year, and he was the leader of 440, of which Atticus Kogar was also a member. And now Atticus Kogar is popping up on an upcoming show for, oh God, I think it's called Circle Six. It's a company out of California. And all indications are that Atticus and GCW just had a pretty messy breakup. But again, this is wrestling, and there are people who online who are 100% convinced this is a complete shoot. There are people convinced it is a total work. But you know what? No one really knows. And that's the wonderful part about professional wrestling.
I saw Alex Colon talk about it briefly, and he's like, he did say that there was a falling out between GCW and Atticus Kogar. And he, if anybody would know the insides and out of GCW and the 4.0, it'd probably be Alex Colon.
Alex Colon would be, is probably why they had a falling out.
It may be, but also he's known for works. So once again, you know, we're not sure, like, what's going down with that. I have seen Atticus wrestle on television. Like, he did that Blood and Guts, I guess they call it War Horse or War Games. Did the War Games show on ECW with the entire 4.0, which was actually one of the best of those types of matches I've seen. That was great. He's got this thing with Masada's skewers, these bright green skewers, which he does in the pit fights and everything. And so he's got his own thing happening. And so I was really looking forward to seeing him live because he kind of stands out talented people.
In addition to him being quite the deathmatch competitor and quite adept at the violent arts, he's also just one of the best old school heels to just, you know, get in there and just make the crowd as pissed off as humanly possible and want to kill this guy that I've seen in a long time.
This guy understands
the psychology of the show.
So we'll have to see, to be continued on that one. I was talking about clocking out early, but we're out of time. We had to wait to the end of the show. So thank you, Nathan, for staying on for the second hour and talking wrestling. So once again, you're going to be at the Terminus show tomorrow night.
Yes, and I also need to say that I will be March 5th at the 187 Tribute to New Jack show Rocky Top, Tennessee, a show that will feature the return to action of the one, the only, the deathmatch icon, the motherfucking Necro Butcher.
And you're going to get to call that match.
Absolutely, I am. Voice of Violence will be there. The one and only Voice of Violence, except no substitute, will be at that show doing my commentary thing and doing my ring announcing thing.
And once again, that's March 6th in Knoxville? Or 5th?
March 5th in Rocky Top, Tennessee. Good old Rocky Top.
Oh, good old Rocky. There's songs about Rocky Top.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, there are. It's about 45 minutes northwest of Knoxville. Beautiful country up there. And come watch us bleed all over it.
That'll be awesome. And so Terminus, and then you're going to be doing that. And then we're going to see on the 12th, and I'm going to give a shout-out to the two shows in IWA is throwing in Chattanooga on the same weekend that we're going to be at GCW. They're doing a pit fighter, and they're doing a no-holds-barred match, and the lineups are solid for both of those shows. So plenty of wrestling to go see, and the IWA shows are always a decent price ticket, never too expensive. Even the GCW ticket wasn't that bad. So, you know, plenty of good, cheap, bloody thrills out there for people to go see live. So thank you again, Nathan, for being on the show. I want to thank again our guest, Jeff Freeman, and good luck on his theatrical premiere and tour of Terror Trips. And, of course, Raven and Aaron, my longstanding co-hosts. Once again, our next show will be... March what? I don't remember. I just said that March 16th. Don't know if what it's going to be yet. We will have a recap of the GCW show and your Rocky Top show and all that on that episode. brief recaps of how those went in the tournament show. But I might have a special guest on that show, so I'm not going to talk about the topic yet. And then again, on the 30th, we're going to do an Oscar recap, even though all of us are all really, really pissed at the Oscars right now. So find the Sexy Witches on Facebook, at the Sexy Witches, same on Twitter, at the Sexy Witches. You can always find me, Elizabeth Catherine Gray, on my personal profile, where I talk about everything from documents to invasions of countries to film, whatever you want. And also, we got three groups on Facebook, the FB Film Geek Circle, which is about movies, the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness, which is about, obviously, horror movies. That is a contest in October. And the Rogue Natasi Station, which is a small but significant science and science fiction group. Thank you all. Good film hunting. We're going to leave you tonight with Atticus Cougar's, because I don't know if I'm going to actually get to hear it live, so I decided I was going to play it tonight, as Cougar's entrance music, Last 10 Seconds of Life by Guillotine Queen. So good night, y'all. Blessed be. Good soul hunting. And see you in a couple weeks.